Sandy Lewis, who had joined us last week, this unique figure up in the Adirondacks who was battling the APA, but from my point of view, equally interesting, maybe more interesting, is what he's built up there. I mean, how many successful, really successful farmers are there in the state? There are a lot of farmers holding on. I'm sure there are plenty that are doing well. But according to Sandy Lewis, his farm up there, some 1,200 acres, is one of the biggest organic farms in the country, and I thought it would be fun to have him back to talk about his farm, the Lewis family farm, as well as some related issues that we had chatted about off air. And it's with that as background that is, I'm very pleased to welcome Sandy Lewis back to the show. Good morning, Sandy. Thanks for being with us.
Good morning.
I enjoy very much enjoy looking at your wife's photographs of your farm online. It reminded me some of Rockwell Kent's paintings. Rockwell Kent was another figure in the Adirondacks for many decades up at All Sable Forks, a controversial figure in a different way than you, of course, but a brilliant artist, and also had a love for the Adirondacks, which I see you have as well. Why did you were a Wall Street figure, Sandy. Your father was a major figure on Wall Street. Why did you decide to get into farming?
Well, we've always loved the North Country, and we've loved farming. It's not something you can do when you live in the inner city in Chicago, which is where we started. When I lived in that city, I was in a school for troubled kids, and they gave us a 12 by 12 plot, and I did the best with it and learned to love it.
No kidding. You grew in your summertime your own little plot of vegetables and flowers, maybe?
Yeah, we had 34 kids in this small institution for disturbed children, and each of us had a 12 by 12 plot at the corner of 60th Street and Dorchester, which later became a softball field.
And this was under the guidance of the famous psychologist Brutal Bettelheim, you told me?
That's correct.
Bettelheim
ran the place, and he did a brilliant job with it.
Very, very interesting. And how long now have you had the farm?
Since 1978.
1978. And how long have you operated it? Would you say it's been the Lewis family farm?
Well, it was by default. We gradually acquired pieces as people went out of business. I think we bought parts of 10 or 11 farms. And at this point, we do have 1,200 acres, and something shy of 900 is arable, and the rest is woods, which is where the cattle are in the wintertime.
How many people are employed in the farming operation, and can you tell us something about your volume of sales?
I can't, because I don't have the numbers accurately, and I'm too addicted to right numbers. I wouldn't want to screw that up. But
okay.
At the end of the day, we have a farm manager, and he has two full-time people. They all work together, and we have several part-time people, and my wife and I.
Do you actually do some farming, you and your wife yourself? That is, do you ride the tractor? Do you participate in harvesting?
Yes and no. In the years past, before this manager was here, I ran all the machines myself.
Really?
And my wife has never been on the machines. That's not what she does.
Right.
But today, we've reduced the number of machines and the type of crops we grow, and our staff handles all machinery. I do not. At this point in my life, I'm 71. We just don't do that.
When you talk about growing large, I guess you have 164 acres, it says on your website, of organic wheat, and you talk about organic hay, organic cattle. What do you mean by organic? You're not using any pesticides? You're not using any fertilizers at all other than organic fertilizers, manure or whatever it may be?
Well, Fred, that's correct. We're certified organic by the U.S. Department of Agriculture. The dirty little secret of American farming in the Agriculture Department is you do not need any of the chemicals or any of the stimulants that are used in any of the crops in this country. We have yields 3 and 4 times per acre any other farm in the country, right here, without any of that.
Well, why would that be? Farmers aren't stupid. They're trained at Cornell or many other places, not just Cornell, of course, but I mentioned Cornell because of how important it is. If it was that possible to double or triple your crop...
Let's not waste a lot of time here.
Sure.
Farmers are stupid. I wish they weren't. Many of them come here and learn what's going on. I learned from a guy named Klaus Martens in Penyan, New York. We brought him up here by plane to have him teach us. Took us a long time. We've made every mistake in the world here listening to the minor institute geniuses who cannot spell the word organic. It's a very dangerous concept that's going on in American farming.
What is that?
Well, they're using methyl bromide to make the perfect potato and destroying the water table. Throughout the nation, they're spraying crops all over the place. They're causing compaction and runoff, and they're shallowing the rivers such as the Mississippi and the Ohio, and that leads to flooding of the Cedar Rapids. It's a disaster.
But if it makes economic sense to do what you're doing, why wouldn't people be pursuing their economic interests?
Well, You know, you were mentioning Alan Shartok Station this morning. They had Bill Cohen on in a talk show. Bill wrote the book, The House of Cards. My father was the managing partner of Bear Stearns, incidentally. Right. He didn't work at Goldman Sachs.
Okay, sorry, Bear Stearns. Right.
No problem. At the end of the day, you might ask the following question, which will take us in a totally different direction. If my father came to Wall Street in 1920-something or other, an honest man, and started working at Bear Stearns in 1937 as an employee, and ended his life at Bear Stearns, and his life actually ended 48 hours later, in 1978, a dishonest man. Ask yourself a question, how that happened. If you look at farms throughout the United States, you can bet they all started without crops being sprayed. You can bet before World War II that none of this nonsense was going on with respect to the fields Monsanto, DuPont. There's a fabulous reporter working for the Washington Post. His name is Peter Whoriskey, W-H-O-R-I-S-K-E-Y, I believe. He's stumbled over the mess that's going on between DuPont and Monsanto on genetically modified soybeans and God knows what else, which are Roundup ready.
Right.
This is a magnificent cancer. Let anybody explain to you or to your listeners what's going on in American farming and you'll vomit.
Well, Sandy, pesticides also were wonderful products for producing many more crops for people and end starvation.
I disagree.
Well, wait a minute. Wouldn't you agree, though, that all kinds of variety of pests, from locusts to weevils, have destroyed crops over the centuries and led to mass starvation, and chemicals have helped stop
Fred,
that?
Fred, what you're saying is a truth, but it is not the truth. There are all kinds of phonies out there who will tell you that you desperately need to kill something to grow something. This simply isn't so.
I don't doubt that the chemical companies have an interest
in
selling your chemicals.
I don't care what the chemical companies...
No, I'm just saying they have a vested interest in selling your chemicals, of course.
Fred, listen, I'm a capitalist, okay?
Yeah, I
bought plenty of stocks, right, left, and center.
Right.
I'm now a farmer and a capitalist, and I'm telling you now, the American farmer needs to learn what organic's all about. The Agriculture Department might as well shut down. Their subsidies are destroying farming. They're not helping it. I wish I could say otherwise.
Sure. Sandy, is your farm profitable?
It is.
Okay. And so you think that farmers doing what you're doing could be making a good living, a reasonable living, surviving?
I said it to the county board recently. This farm could make seven figures. It isn't doing it now. We're getting there slowly. But we have made a lot of mistakes, Fred, and it's taken us a long time to learn. You go to the experts to learn, and you get garbage. We have not been able to learn from experts except for Klaus Martens and Pen Yan.
Very interesting. Sandy, I was talking before you joined us. I don't know if you were listening to the show.
I did listen.
I played that Pete Seeger song from back in the 1940s, and I used it as a segue to talk about what you had told me about your experience with a couple of public radio stations up in the North Country. I know you've been disappointed with their coverage or lack of coverage of your battle with the APA. I wonder if you could share some of those experiences with us.
Well, it's a longer story than that. There are two radio stations on this side of Lake Champlain that we can hear, and it's a struggle to hear either one of them, so we don't hear them all that often. Vermont Public Radio, which we just supported with a $25,000 grant, is one we can hear quite easily. In the case of Alan Shartok's station, which is WAMC, and a station in Plattsburgh named after our grandchild, Chloe Elizabeth Lewis, we've had... over the years, a pretty good relationship with Alan. But Alan is a mixed bag in my book. Now, this is an opinion. This is not fact. Alan Shartok solicited us on many occasions, and we wanted very much to support him. I think Alan's one of the most amusing human beings on the planet. I think his fundraiser is almost more interesting than the program. Having said that, when we declined to fund Plattsburgh, and when I declined to advance funding for a tower in Elizabethtown, Alan withdrew ambassadors. We just didn't talk anymore. I also labeled him to his face a pinko, and he didn't like that. Well, I'm as left as Alan is on many issues. I support and voted for Obama. But, you know, I get tired of the political line, and we just simply got tired of Alan. So we withdrew, and we don't speak anymore. I did speak with him yesterday, and I asked him if he covers us. He said he's sure he did. He may be right. We have not heard it. Others we've asked have not heard it. And when I've called Katie Britton yesterday and before, and Pat Bradley in the North Country yesterday and before, to ask whether or not they'd like to cover us or have covered us, no calls come back.
Cindy, let me just jump in and just say part of what you're getting at here is that the people behind these so-called public radio stations are often the elitist environmentalists and others who are the same people who are very much behind the APA. Isn't that your feeling?
Here, hang on a second.
And their coverage, therefore,
you might call Sandy and Barbara Lewis elitists and environmentalists as well. But I have to make a difference here. When we came up here, we supported these 501c3s. The Adirondack Council is the leading one. And Shartok Station or North Country Public Radio, I have seen ads of theirs in Adirondack Council literature, from which I conclude that anonymous givers, as we were, who have supported places like the Adirondack Council, is a wonderful little invention. I'm sure it had great instincts in the beginning, but today it doesn't. Today you've got a head guy at the Adirondack Council who's used his council to motivate the APA to bludgeon two families on Silver Lake up here. It's in the courts. I don't like what Brian Reuter has done here. And with respect to Alan Shartok, who masquerades, and I love him to bits, for being for the little guy. The little guys up here are getting killed. And they're getting killed by this keretsu of 501c3s that sit around and collect money anonymously and then do their best to influence the APA.
Right.
Now, the APA is something to study because people think we're opposed to the APA. Let the record show again and again I've said I'm not opposed to the APA. And I'm not opposed to regulation in the North Country. If without the APA, this place would be a disaster. So, whereas the APA and the Adirondack Council and North Country Public Radio and Alan Shartok and a lot of others are worried about the same issues we're worried about, I just can't stand the way they're going about executing. Well, at the end of the day, it isn't fair to the little people.
Let me just say, Sandy, you raised concerns about those two so-called public radio stations and their willingness to cover your battles with the APA, which you have won.
Well, they handled it differently. Yeah. In the case of Brian Mann, who works for Ellen Rocco and Martha Foley at North Country Public Radio, Brian Mann has covered this. Mm. I just object to his method of coverage. I don't think it's fair. I don't think it's biased. He selectively picked up on a comment I made about incest in the North Country. We endowed the Smith House Healthcare Center in Willsboro. At that time, they opened their books and showed me that incest was the number one concern of that health center at that time.
Right.
I made reference to that in a tiny little meeting with the Adirondack Review Board chaired by Fred Monroe.
Good man.
Yes, he is a good man. I think he's terrific, and I think he's loyal to his people and very much interested in the survival of the APA, and he sits there without a vote, which is ridiculous. In the meantime, Mr. Mann, running around with his microphone, chose to feature just that aspect where I made a comment on incest in the North Country. Well, we got two kinds of incest up here. One kind's the kind he's talking about, to which I referred, which is in the records of the Smith House Healthcare Center. The other kind of incest is over in Raybrook, where you've got intermarried couples and you've got the Peter Payne concept of putting together the Adirondack Council, the Nature Conservancy, of which he was executive vice president or something, and then 20 years on the APA board. These things work in a group, and they work in a group to destroy the livelihoods of people up here. This has been stated many times. I didn't believe it, but I see it.
Sandy, we've gotten a comment apparently emailed to us from Ellen Rocco, who's the station
manager.
Yeah,
she's a nice lady, and she's promised to come visit the farm, and I hope she'll come.
What she writes is that Sandy Lewis has never contributed any money to North Country Public
Radio. That's absolutely correct. I've never given a dime to them, and I don't intend to do it until I hear fair coverage.
And she says, and Fred, we are not so-called public radio. We are actual public radio. Last I looked, they were not elected up there. I'm not sure what makes them public radio. Maybe getting subsidies from the federal government helps with that. What do you think about the concept of public radio?
Well, you know, it's again the pendulum effect. When public radio came in, I think it performed a heck of a good service for the nation.
There was a need for it.
It still does, Fred. Right. I take issue with that. I call them whatever you like, public or not public. The sham of public radio, and Shartok's a perfect example of this, they spend all day long raising money from sponsors, as they're called, which are nothing more than advertisers.
No question.
These people get a tax deduction, which they would get if they bought an ad on your station.
They don't
it's
have to pay any
general tax effect. But the con of public radio, and it is a con, is that somehow or other they're supporting themselves with donations. Those donations are tax-deductible. They're paid for in a subsidized way by the American tax system.
Also, if you add up the time they put into their fundraising, say on AMC, they may have more ads than commercial stations do, plus the salaries that they pay. I'm sure you've seen the figures over the years.
I have not seen the figures, but let me say the following. The American system of charities, the 501c3 system, IRS system, is, in my opinion, a terrific system for certain purposes. But what I object to, and to the extent that you're putting me on, I wish to say this, in this environment up here in the North Country, when Brian Reuter uses the Adirondack Council to motivate the APA to beat up on his neighbors on Silver Lake, that may be a federal crime. It has to be investigated. And as I said on your program last week, and with great respect for Attorney General Cuomo, I think it's ironic that Cuomo spends so much energy beating up this farm when he could look at the cause of this process. We're right on the law, right on through. And incidentally, there's a new letter, we'll post it on our website, where Cuomo's Assistant Attorney General, Loretta Simon, has asked for the opportunity, please, to hold the next hearing, which Judge Meyer wants as an evidentiary hearing, out in the open. These guys would like to do it on the papers, so-called on submission. This would deprive the press and the public of the opportunity to see and experience what goes on in Judge Meyer's court as opposed to a lot of other courts up here. So in due course, I suppose we'll respond to that. Now, please, let's get back to the issue.
We only have a couple of minutes, Andy, so if you would, go ahead.
Well, I just want to be clear about something. Alan Chartok has been a personal friend of ours. We sent the plane for him and flew him to Rockport, Maine. We put the anonymous fundraiser on when David Axelrod was taken with this awful aneurysm, you know, and asked Alan to put a radio by his bedside to see if he was awake. We did this anonymously. We have a great affection for Alan Chartok and for his wife, Roselle. What I take offense to, and I really do, is the process by which Alan Chartok turns on and turns off as to whether or not people give him money. When we declined in Plattsburgh, and when we declined to front in E-Town, and more importantly, when I declined him at a brunch he was going to throw for us because some child was in desperate shape in Lake Placid, this guy turned off. So I don't... I have trouble with this posture that Alan takes, where he's in favor of the little guy. The little guy up here is dying. He's getting crushed. And the people who are advertising through these public radio affiliates with their donations, let the donors step forward and disclose who they are. I've asked the Adirondack Council to publish their donor list. To me, I'm a member. They won't do it.
Really?
In violation of their own charter. We have some issues here, Fred. I mean, these are good people doing some things which I question.
Yep.
It doesn't make them bad people, but it makes this whole situation difficult. And I'll tell you, we're up here for a long time. Barbara and I are considering how we want to live the next few years of our life. We have a wonderful farm here, and I hope we stay.
I hope so, too, Sandy. We've got to run. Listen, I'd love to have you back again down the road to talk more about your farm. It's a unique situation up there. I wish maybe you could share with us some ideas of how local people could make more money up there and maybe survive and have farms,
Fred,
like yours.
Back to your original question.
We only have about a minute.
What you asked the original question, yep, which just came to my mind because you mentioned my dad, about how farmers can go bad. It's a much more interesting question of how Cy Lewis could go bad. The entire street can be framed in that question today in this debt crisis.
We'll talk about that another time. Sandy Lewis, thanks so much for joining us this morning.
You're more than welcome.
Take care, and people can check out Sandy Lewis's farm. It's a beautiful farm, or learn about it at his Sandy Lewis, I guess it's the LewisFamilyFarm.com website, www.lewisfamilyfarm.com. This is Fred Dicker live at the State Capitol. We've got